to Is Able, the radio show about possibility, where we look at what a person with disabilities can do rather than what they cannot do. Hello, this is Dr. Steve Nurse, and the program that we're going to be listening to is Abled. This series is on online education, what we're dealing with COVID, and the title is Online Learning, Is It Connected or Disconnected? Today, we're interviewing an expert in many, many things. His name is Eric Hogan. He is a PhD, and he used to work with me at Central Washington University. Now he works by himself and is very lonely there. And let's see, and he is the father. He wants me to introduce him as the father of three girls. And so we're going to talk to him about that, too, because he kind of leads a dual life. I talked to him last night on the phone, making sure we set up for the interview, and he's like every other dad around. The minute you get on the phone, you know, the kids want you, right? And let's see if I can remember him right. Let's see. The 9-year-old is Ava, right?
Yep, correct, Eva.
Mm-hmm. Eva, and then mm-hmm. Lucia?
Yeah, Lucia.
Mm-hmm. Lucia, and then Ruby.
Ruby Ann.
Is the youngest, yeah, Ruby Ann is the youngest. And I think one of the nice things about this interview and talking about online is that Eric really is wearing two hats, the hat of a parent that is dealing with children that are working with online education, as well as a professor and doing distance education as you would in a college and online education and working with graduate students that are working on their master's degree in education. So, Eric, why don't you, is there anything that I forgot about you?
I think you covered it, Steve. Thank you.
All right. His parole officer allowed him to be here today. So, why don't you first, Eric, tell us a little bit about, COVID kind of hit us really, I guess, kind of fast in the face. We kind of knew it was coming a little bit then, but then bang, it was here. And so let's talk a little bit about the father aspects of it for right now.
Sure.
What was difficult for you? What were the things that you dealt with that you weren't expecting? Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like in two different chapters. So when COVID initially hit in the spring of 2020. My daughters are in third grade, and actually it was at that time second grade and first grade, and then pre-kindergarten. And it was very difficult because we didn't quite know how to do the transition. Nobody did. The educational systems didn't. Parents didn't know how to sort of pivot. So it was a really difficult transition, and it was, everyone was trying to do the best that they could at that time, knowing what they know. And, for my kids, at first it was thrilling to be able to sleep in and, take a 3-minute commute from their bed to the, their desk downstairs. But, we immediately had to create a physical space for them. And we didn't have devices, so we had to, scrounge up some devices for them to use, for the online learning, as the school was pivoting.
Was the school district pretty, quick? And if they were pretty quick in getting, the computers and those kinds of things out to students?
For the spring, we did not get computers. It was sort of everyone was on their own. And, that kind of plays bare the huge gap in equity issues that this pandemic has revealed or amplified.
Sure.
And so we are privileged in many ways. So we were able to provide that physical space. We were able to provide those devices. We were able to provide that high-speed internet to them. So three kids could be streaming their Zoom sessions if need be. And plus me working full time, I could be on my Zoom meetings and teaching as well and not have any issues. But a lot of families weren't in that same situation. I know teaching college, for example, you know, I've had a university student, you know, a lot of them have their cameras off, which is completely okay in my book, because, you know, a lot of them don't have a space that they either want to show or they might be embarrassed about, or they're trying to, not be distracted by everything that's going in the background. You know, so, for example, one student was sitting in their bathtub during class because they're in a house of, you know, two bedrooms with four or five siblings, and, you know, everybody was home. You know, and Steve, I just want to also mention, like, we're also privileged in the sense that nobody in our home was sick, right? So a lot of my students, their parents were sick, or they lost their jobs, and they had, you know, financial, you know, sort of insecurity, and had food insecurity, and it just goes down the list. So it just, like I said, the pandemic at the time in the spring just sort of amplified everything. And so that was a challenge. And my one daughter has special needs. And I will say, like, at the time, they didn't know how to sort of serve that specific population at that time. And they were doing the best they can. But basically, we were just receiving from the school district or from the special ed teacher worksheets, right? In my mind, it was sort of like just busy work.
Yes.
And so immediately, I just said, I mean, they're pretty lucky that their dad is an education professor. So I set up a class schedule at home. We followed it. It involved the arts. You know, it also involved, you know, the mathematics and reading and writing. But it was a good balance, and recess and just having fun, right? And so it was a good schedule. It worked for us. We got through the spring. The girls then transferred. This is chapter two. The girls then transferred to John Stanford International School, which is a wonderful school up in Wallingford.
Amazing school.
Okay. Yeah, really amazing. Yes. And so that has been a transition too, because the kids we're a no device family. I mean, we have a TV and everything, but the kids just didn't know how to use a computer. They didn't know how to turn it on. They didn't know how to use browser tabs. So there was many layers of complexity going into the fall as well. So they did get devices from Seattle Public Schools. So, you know, my daughter got a iPad, and then my other one got a laptop. And, you know, what we did was we just, you know, went with the flow, but they also, you know, we had the technology challenges. We also, you know, they were at a brand new school. They had no connection, no relationship piece with the teachers or their peers. And it's bilingual. So they were learning academic Spanish, which is a lot different than the playground Spanish. That
sure. And I think you bring up another issue of equity there in with some families may not have the, you know, technological skills to use browsers, to hook up to the system. Or like you mentioned, for the first quarter there, if a family didn't have a computer in the home, if a family didn't have a hookup to the internet, they're pretty much out of the program, and that doesn't bode well for keeping your education and remembering everything.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? We're in the shadow of these huge tech giants, Microsoft and Amazon. And, you know, we are also in many ways in the internet desert. And so a lot of families showed that they, or indicated that they had internet access. But a lot of times it was through their mobile phones. And so, you know, if you can even get access to those devices, right? But then once you do, you may not be able to stream a class, a Zoom class, throughout the day, you know, so it's real challenging. It's real challenging to make sure that everybody has the right equipment, the right access. And again, you had the sort of real equity gaps that sort of widened during this pandemic.
And it just seems to me that, you know, like we said, it just came on, and there was no model to to prepare us for it whatsoever. And the, of course, the pandemic in itself. And I think, you know, you mentioned your daughter, you know, has some special needs. And I also, you know, my doctorate's in special ed, and I worked with a lot of kids. Worked with a program in the summer that worked with children with behavioral issues. That's an entirely different situation in how do you keep a seven-year-old that likes to get out of their chair and likes to move around in front of a computer screen. I mean, I think we're trying to make this one system fit for all students, and I don't think it does.
Yeah, absolutely. Even for the little ones as well. My youngest, she's five, and she was slated for kindergarten, and we decided to hold her back 1 year because what we noticed was in the spring during her preschool went online. They did an amazing job pivoting online, and they were as entertaining as you can get and also educational. They did a beautiful job, Casita Feliz in Seattle. But she could only hold her attention for an hour or two, and then she was just like, I just want to play the dolls, or I want to read a book, or, you know, it didn't work. And so we knew that, you know, that her kindergarten is, you know, that first year is really important as a foundational year. And sure. So we held back. But you know what? A lot of other, so many folks in the Seattle and other around the nation had did the same. And a lot of my former students that are now kindergarten teachers, you know, they have classes of 8 to 10 students. so that, you know, they say is like, on one hand, it's harder to be online with kindergarten, but on the other hand, it is the smallest classes that they've had. And, you know, Steve, always want are smaller classes, because we know it is so much easier to give that feedback, build those relationships, make those connections. And so they have these classes of 8 to 10, some, I'm not saying all kindergarten classes, but it allows them to really build those stronger connections with the students and individualize that instruction, which is what, you know, what we try to do in public education.
You know, and I've always thought this has kind of been interesting, is that we generally through elementary school have classes that are usually somewhere between 22 and 30 students, depending upon districts and which kids come in. And it always seemed to me, just to kind of use a random number like that for class size was really difficult, because, you know, you can have 10 kids in a class that demand a tremendous amount of time from the teacher.
Absolutely.
And yet you can have a large class when the majority of the students are very independent. And it just seems that, and I know, you know, reducing the class size to that, and you're, I think another thing I would, you know, emphasize that you said that I really agree with is that, you know, the kids, if they can get the foundation for reading and the basics for math in the kindergarten, first, second grade classes, then they can, you know, they can get past that. Then they're going to learn comprehension. They're going to build those kinds of skills older. But having those, the basics are just critical. You know, it's trying to read in a different language if you don't have those. Well, what are some of the things that you, you mentioned some of the things that you deal with at working with your college students, but I wonder how they're going to be able to manage behavior when they've got a class, you know, they're training themselves and working online. Do they get any on-hand experience? Are there any districts that they're working with now, do you know, that they're actually meeting with students?
Yeah, I mean, if I understand your question correctly, like our student teachers at Central are, you know, they are moving forward with their student teaching. It's just now on online virtual. But again, you know, I think a centerpiece of teaching is relationships. And it just makes it so much more difficult to be able to lean into those students, understand what their interests are, what motivates them, you know, give them those nonverbal cues of like getting back on task or, you know, or making pivots if you know students are bored. You know, I think that's one of the hardest things is like, it's just so, even when I'm teaching, it's just so hard to read the students, the audience, I guess, to say, like, and be able to do shifts. So if you notice, like, oh, I'm going on a little too long, I'm going to add in this, you know, engagement strategy to get them talking and bringing up their voice. You know, sometimes you miss those cues. And so it's just really difficult for the student teachers at this time, I think, to, they're managing the best that they can. And they, you know, at Central, they do go through online training classes. And it's really funny because I've been getting former students who are like, I never thought I'd be applying what I learned in your class to such a degree. You know, so they've got the tools. But again, you can have the tools. But if it's, it still comes down to relationship. We're in a relationship business in education. And not be able to have that personal connection can make it really difficult. But they're doing the best they can. And I'll tell you, Steve, there is some flexibility within the system. You know, with Microsoft Teams or Zoom, you can do breakout rooms. So you can have one-on-one. So, you know, as an example, my daughter, she is actually receiving incredible services through special education now, like really incredible services. And, you know, it's because they can do one-on-one and they can do it instantaneously. And, you know, they can really focus on instruction and building those relationships. So, you know, a lot of the student teachers are following that same model where they can do breakout rooms or work with students that are maybe struggling around specific topics. And in the meantime, build those relationships with the small groups.
You know, one of the things, you know, I used to edit articles for a journal that was called Special Education Technology. And that's really one of the things that special ed picked up pretty early was in some of the communities that were more rural, and you would have a speech therapist or a counselor or a psychologist, you know, they were spending all their time driving and they could go online, really focus on a screen and work with a child. And also, the one of the things that I thought was most important, the parents were also there to see it. And the parents could then, you know, practice the same types of, they could practice the same types of skills that the speech therapist was working with them, you know, 20 minutes a day. I mean, it was, that was, to me, was a positive part of it. And I'm really glad to hear that your daughter's getting those kinds of services.
Steve, I'll just interject real fast. Like, you mentioned a really key point, which I think is, you know, a lot of people are completely looking, you know, they badmouth this model a lot. And, you know, I'm definitely not a proponent of it, but there are some benefits. And one of them is the I think there is a stronger, possibly, school to home connection, because I think parents in general maybe are, you know, more aware of what's happening in the school, what the kids are learning. And, you know, I know, for example, I've seen examples where teachers are trying to bridge that a little bit more by, you know, for example, not just giving a kid a worksheet, but maybe having them using fractions to do cooking with their mom or dad, or their family. So there's different ways of sort of, you know, that the school is building those connections with families.
And I think, I think another really important thing there is, and this kind of builds on what you were saying, is I think sometimes in, you know, in the past, teachers would see parents once or twice for conferences. And, you know, maybe if the kid was a bad kid, you know, the parents got to see the kid at school or the counselor a little more often. But now I think parents really have, or I mean, teachers really have a realization maybe of what some of those houses look like, what some of the parents are going through, and realize that, gee, if they miss a conference, it's not that they're lazy and don't care. It's because
they're working two or three jobs.
They're working two or three jobs, or they've got two kids under school age that are still at home, and, you know, transportation may be an issue and all those kinds of things. So maybe there are some positives. And you know, I think there are glitches in the system, but I'm like you. I hate to badmouth the system entirely, because I think most districts, have done the best job that they can. And I think they're moving pretty rapidly. And it may change, just like we say, this pandemic may change, you know, the world, you know, from here on forward. You know, a lot of the things that we're learning may, you know, may change education for the positive, too. Yeah. And I think that's really important. Let's talk a little bit about, do you think there are ways that you can do this kind of work, education online, and address some of those factors of socialization? I think that, you know, I think that my kids learn as much or more about socialization and working with others and working out problems. I think that was as important as the academics. So yeah, how do you build that in?
Well, I think that's the soft underbelly of being in remote learning, is that you don't have necessarily the opportunity to be with folks and have that socialization, because learning is socially constructed, and we pick up on cues from others that are both verbal and nonverbal, and we learn those soft skills about leadership and communication and working with teams. So I really do believe there, you know, as we hopefully get those vaccines and we maybe transition back into schools in a safe way, you know, that again is one, I think, of the really key components of schooling in person, that isn't measured on a standardized test, but is fundamental to being just a really decent human and be able to sort of operate within our society and develop empathy and, you know, care for others. So, you know, I'm not sure how this model will play out. I imagine, like you had mentioned earlier, that there are going to be some really well-researched and documented features of this that we can learn lessons from and incorporate into our older model and think about ways of, you know, creating sort of a menu approach to learning, much like my daughters are experiencing right now, where they have these sort of core ideas that they're learning, but they can choose, you know, specific activities they want to engage with. Some are required, but then they can choose from there. And so that can help them really channel their interests and passions. So it'll be interesting to see how this, you know, plays out.
And don't you think, too, that, you know, when I think about my own kids, I really wanted them to learn how to be critical thinkers.
Yeah.
And I remember one time with my youngest daughter, she was downtown Seattle. She was in a junior high school age, and she missed a bus coming back to the island, Vashon. And, you know, she knew exactly what to do. She thought it out. She called me. We checked the schedule. I eventually wound up, you know, actually getting a taxi for her to get her down to the ferry dock. But, I mean, she didn't, you know, just jump in the car with somebody that stopped
right.
by, you know.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, those are the things we really, I think, value in life, are being able to work through a situation. And that's kind of the critical thinking piece is kind of what's happening to us right now in this pandemic. You know, we just can't throw up our hands. And I don't know about you, but when the vaccine comes around, I'll take it as quick as I can get it. I heard somebody interviewing on TV that were saying, you know, they asked somebody, does the vaccine have preservatives in it? And I'm thinking, hey, at 72, you know, the more preservatives my body can handle, the more I want, you know. So bring it on.
It's a good perspective.
Yeah. Yep. So anyhow, I wouldn't have to think about that too long. Well, let's, I don't know how much time we have, but I want to let everybody know that we're speaking with Dr. Eric Hogan, PhD and associate professor at Central Washington University. What do you think makes a difference if teachers are older, I mean, you know, or brand new teachers? How do we work with teachers and kind of instill in them an excitement to teach? And, you know, people don't like change. What do you think about that? I do you think most of your students that are you're bringing up now have the skills to do this?
I do believe that many of the teacher candidates coming out have equal to or better skills than maybe in technology skills, right? Than some of the older veterans that, you know, I even have some colleagues at Central that really avoid trying to use the internet as much as possible or our learning management systems that we call them, post assignments. But everyone has made the pivot. Everyone has had to put their head down and just embrace the reality that we currently have and make those changes. And, you know, I will just say to your listeners, you know, teachers don't necessarily need more PD. I mean, obviously, like if there's a gap and teachers don't know how to post assignments to a learning management system, they need PD. That I'm not saying that. What they need is actually TLC. And this is really, really difficult. I mean, we are all experiencing a collective trauma from the pandemic, from the election, and you can just keep going from 2020 on.
Sure,
right?
Sure, like, yeah.
And it's really hard for the teachers right now. I'm actually received a grant from the state and we're leading through self-care and social emotional learning for adults, for the teachers. And, you know, so many have expressed that they're working double, triple what they normally would do in terms of planning, but yielding only about half the joy, right? Because we're all in it to teach. Obviously we want a professional pay, but we also do it because we love the kids and we love teaching. And to not get that joy back is really, really difficult. And a lot of the teachers are struggling. They are struggling. I mean, I just got a text yesterday from a former student who said she's just doing some ugly cries about like two or three times a week.
Yeah.
Just because of how difficult it is. So I just ask your listeners, like, if you got a moment and you have school age kids, you know, just, if you can, just send a note, a thank you, an email, just saying, you know, really appreciate all the effort that you're putting into helping support our students during this time, because it's definitely difficult.
And I think that, you know, I taught for 50 years in many different situations, and I ran into very, very few teachers that I didn't think were there really, truly for the kids.
Absolutely.
And I don't think you're going to last very long in education if you don't care about the kids and if you're just taking the job to have a job. And that is so important. And, you know, I hear people saying, well, you know, they're only teaching 3 hours a day. Well, most of the teachers that I know that are working in this kind of a system are working longer than they did because you've got to figure out how to use the system, and there's a lot of glitches in it. So,
You know, Steve, I've heard the same thing about the 3 hours, and I don't know where that reality is coming from because,
yes.
You know, I mean, I can look at just my three daughters. I mean, I'm in the room a lot of times, and, you know, they are structured, and they have maybe whole class 3 to 4 hours per day, but then they have the one-on-one, they have the family connection time. You know, they have, you know, meetings with, you know, around special needs or EAL students, like, and then they are planning. And, you know, it's taken a toll a lot. I mean, especially with all the screens, a lot of these teachers have 2 or 3 screens up and, you know, then they have to be on the screen again to plan. And, you know, they're getting migraines and I mean, it's taking a toll.
It is taking a toll. And I think that we've just about run out of town. No, we've not been run out of town yet. And I haven't been run out of the station yet. But if I am, I'm going to contest it. I'm going to ask for a revote. And I'm not leaving here until they take me bodily from the facility. So, Eric, thank you very much. That's Eric Hogan, who was our interviewee today. And everybody out there in Vashon, enjoy yourself and enjoy the sun and the cold today. Have a good one, and we'll talk to you later, Eric.
All right.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
To stream this or any other episode of Is Abled with Dr. Stephen W. Nurse, go to voiceofashon.org and look under the Shows tab.